It's 5:10 on Tuesday, April 13th, 2010. We have a quorum that's here. We have Senator Thomas, Senator Menard, myself, Senator Olson. The purpose of today's committee meeting is for the informational hearing on Arctic industrial activity and prevention systems, not for the consideration of any legislation. We have a number of invited speakers joining us today, and they represent a range of positions on the question of whether marine transportation in the Arctic Ocean should be subject to compulsory marine pilotage. Marine transportation in and around the Arctic is a hot topic these days. The shrinking polar ice cap and the warming Arctic Ocean is opening all sorts of new commercial activity in this area, until now, which has been inaccessible. Shipping goods between Asia and Europe through the Arctic waters could cut off as many as 8 days of the length of a voyage and save millions of dollars in freight costs. As the ice recedes, new offshore oil and gas potential is exposed. New fisheries are possible and as species migrate north into warming Arctic waters, and a navigable Northwest Passage will entice many cruise ships and other tourism. How should Alaska prepare for all these new commercial activities? One of the precautionary measures used in other regions is to require that a state-licensed marine pilot be used in certain commercial ships. These pilots report to the state instead of the operating companies. Marine pilots are required in other Alaskan waters, and there is an active debate underway as to whether or not this requirement should extend to the Arctic. Today we have a number of invited guests to go ahead and testify. Before we get started, I'd like to note that Senator French has joined us. To start off the testimony, we'll have the North Slope Borough Mayor, Edward, to come on up and testify. In order to expedite everybody that's here at this late hour, we'll give everybody at least 4 minutes.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor,
thank
please.
You. I'm Mayor Edward Zahnita, Mayor of the North Slope Borough. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I appreciate this chance to join with other invited speakers today to give some perspective on the question of whether or not Alaska should require state-licensed marine pilots in the Arctic as OCS development gets underway. Frankly, I cannot understand why the state would consider any other option. Marine pilotage is required in all the other coastal areas of Alaska. Every coastal state in America requires marine pilotage under some circumstances. What makes the Arctic any different? Is the weather that much better? Are the ice conditions less challenging up there? The reason for requiring marine pilots in the Arctic is the same as it is for requiring them in Prince William Sound or in the Aleutians. It is a basic safety measure that Alaska and other states use to protect their coastal waters. It only applies to certain big vessels that will cause a larger catastrophe if they have an accident. It only applies when ships come to ports or harbors, or when there are ship-to-ship activities such as cargo transfers or fueling operations. Some of these activities take place well beyond the state's 3-mile limit, which is why federal law allows the state to assert its pilotage authority beyond 3 miles. Why would Alaska abandon this opportunity to take control in federal waters? We Alaskans often complain about federal control. Well, here we are in a situation where the state can take control in federal waters, and if the state decides not to, there will be no oversight. And it won't matter if we're talking about U.S. flagships that play by the rules or foreign ships that may have a different idea about what is safe and what risks are worth taking. Is that what Alaskans want? I don't think so, certainly not in our neighborhood. The difference between a state licensed pilot and a pilot that works for Shell or some other company is that the state licensed pilot is not beholden to that company. He is not a state employee, but he reports to the state. He is an independent set of eyes and skills, captaining the ship only in the riskiest situations. Alaskans should demand that an independent professional is making decisions under those circumstances. State licensed marine pilots are already working in western and northwestern Alaska waters. They have handled all traffic to and from the dock at the Red Dog Mine ever since it opened. For the past 20 years, they've been piloting cruise ships coming across the Arctic Ocean from Canada. So they have more Arctic experience than any other pilots in America. As the oil industry ramps up for offshore operations during the next decade, these same Alaska Marine pilots can expand their skills in ice-infested waters in the same time frame. So here's the way I look at it. Alaska has a vast ocean, vast area of ocean where ship traffic is a new phenomenon. Now is the time to plan for it by putting in place the same safety precautions used elsewhere in Alaska. And now is the time to do it, because if we wait until later, it probably won't happen. And yet, for some reason that I fail to understand, the state is taking no action to provide this basic safety in the Arctic Ocean. Marine pilotage works for the cruise industry. It works for the mining industry. But we're about to let the oil industry have a lower standard of safety, even though its operations are riskier. And I don't get it. Governor Parnell said a few months ago that he wasn't going to sacrifice one resource for another when it comes to offshore development. At the moment, his administration is thinking of sacrificing a safety standard that works everywhere else in Alaska, and it works in other coastal areas of the United States. If it's not required in the Arctic, Alaskans may end up making a big, big sacrifice, one that we don't want to make. And I thank you for this time and opportunity, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Koyana.
Mr. Mayor, thank you very much for your testimony this afternoon.
Okay.
Do we have any questions of the mayor by any members of the committee? Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mayor Ed. The proposal is basically to do what's done in Prince William Sound, I suspect. Is that a fair analogy anyhow?
I would say so. It's modeled after that.
Okay.
Just safety.
Okay.
Yes.
And if I may?
Senator Thomas.
And similar to other countries as well that do that. I'm assuming Canada does has marine pilots that are familiar with that type of climate and ice conditions and the other particular weather that presents itself from time to time.
Yes, Senator, in concept, yes. And for more specifics, I would defer to, I believe, one of your last invited speakers, and that's Captain Pete Gray.
Okay.
Who has more answers relative to that, Senator.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Okay. Any further questions of the mayor by any members of the committee? If not, Mr. Mayor, I do have a question for you. As you look at, as a person that's lived up there all your life, a whaling captain and a fair amount of accomplishments on your roster, what do you see as the biggest fear that you have that's going to happen up there?
The biggest fear that we have is oil spills, and that's caused by transport of oil in tankers. That is why this is so critical and crucial to us, Senator.
And with that, where's the closest oil spill response team at this moment that's there, or do you know? And if you don't know, that's fine. They may not even be existent for that matter.
There is, Senator, Alaska Clean Seas, which is in Prudhoe Bay, but very limited equipment. And again, for a major spill, think the nearest major place would probably be down in Alaska somewhere, thousands of miles.
That is true. Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony this afternoon.
Thank you again.
Next we have Mr. Cam Tui from Shell Oil. Mr. Tui?
We have counsel to speak to Shell.
Are you not going to testify? Because I've got you before him.
I can. I just defer to Callum.
Okay. Captain Callum Finlayson, Marine Oil Division.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Thanks for inviting me. For the record, my name is Callum Finlayson. I'm Shell Upstream America's Regional Marine Manager. I'm accountable for marine activities here in Alaska, but also down through to the Gulf of Mexico and beyond down to Brazil. Thank you for the invitation to speak to you today. I am going to focus more on what we are doing in actuality rather than whether or not the question of the marine pilot or extension of compulsory marine pilotage is a valid action or not. Mm-hmm. I would question the accuracy of what Mayor Ito said with regard to federal law allowing the extension of compulsory marine pilotage. Our understanding is that it is not.
With all due respect, Captain, I think he was talking about state law.
Well, so I don't wish to get into the legal questions of it, but there is a letter from Rear Admiral Baumgartner of the U.S. Coast Guard that addresses the legal issues quite clearly, and I believe we've got copies of that. We've circulated PowerPoint presentations. I'll try and work through, in the interest of time, I'll try and work through these as quickly as possible. I won't go through each individual slide. Just to put this into context, I am a former master mariner. I had spent 24 years of my life at sea. The last five of those, up until 2003, was as master of deep-sea tankers and gas tankers. And I always took a pilot, coming into and leaving port. Whether pilotage was compulsory or not, I always took a pilot. My position prior to coming to the U.S. here back in 2007 was as marine manager at a Shell gas plant back in the U.K. that was navigationally difficult to access, and we had a very strict requirement for pilotage to be used there. Pilots are a very necessary added value resource when it comes to managing marine risk for vessels that are coming in and out of port. And the state of Alaska is entirely right to look at Captain Garay and his colleagues in the various pilotage associations to mitigate that risk. I stress coming in and coming out of port. The risks offshore are radically different and are managed differently. And that's what this presentation is about. Like I say, in the interest of time, I'll try and work through this as quickly as possible. The first slide with a map of the area titled Operations just shows where our two main anticipated areas of operation are going to be in the Beaufort and Chukchi Seas. There will be operations taking place between vessels and the one rig this year offshore if all goes well. The ports that we will use in Alaska are primarily going to be Dutch Harbor and Nome. And there's no doubt that we will be using pilots in both these harbors as required. It's what we have to do, and it's what is right to do. Our activities with these vessels, and I'm talking purely the marine activities. I'm not talking about the drilling per se. I am not a driller. You might have noticed I don't have horns anywhere, so. Activity is primarily a rig move, so the moving of the rig will be done by specialist vessels chartered in. Resupply of the rig, and also the science and research vessels, which have been operating here for many, many years. The supply types, the types of cargo that we carry are the general cargo, the fourth bullet there, the pipe, the mud, the chemicals that may be required, the rope, soap and dope, as it's euphemistically called, people transfers, water occasionally, and fuel transfers. These are the activities that we undertake. Moving on to the next slide. We feel it's important to address the issue of agency involvement in marine activities. There can be, I am not aware that there is any other industry, possibly outside of the nuclear industry, but certainly with more conventional industries, that is as heavily regulated as the marine industry is. Now, the regulatory body, if you like, within the marine sector is the U.S. Coast Guard, which is a hugely impressive organization in that regard. When I arrived here 3 years ago, I was amazed at the competence and the ability of U.S. Coast Guard to understand maritime risk and work with all stakeholders in this industry to make sure that these risks are mitigated. An extremely competent body, I'm hugely impressed with them. The International Maritime Organization is the organization that sets legislation, if you like, from an international perspective, and they're heavily involved in everything that we do also. The table that's on that slide, the marine resource matrix there, we've just given an overview historically of the numbers of vessels we've used. We anticipate in 2010 that we will have something in the region of 26 vessels, which is a significant number and a very varied number type of, a very varied profile of vessels. Following on from that are the support structures that we have. There are communication centers, shared communication centers, the location of which will depend very much on where we operate. There is no doubt that the theater is one of the harshest, most difficult environments to work in, so that the focus on weather forecasting and particularly ice forecasting is something that we have concentrated on and invested quite heavily in, and are very proud, dare I say it, of the structures that we have in place to monitor that. Oil spill response, there are comprehensive oil spill response plans in place, and there's a comprehensive level of equipment. I believe of the 26 vessels, something like 11 of them have dedicated resources for oil spill response.
Chairman?
Senator French.
Maybe while we're on this subject of the vessels, I could ask you, who will be piloting these ships, these 26 vessels?
So these vessels will have their own vessel master on board, and a number of them will also have ICE advisors. The term pilot does not typically apply in the offshore industry, on offshore support vessels such as supply vessels or anchor boats, or the smaller seismic science vessels that operate. So it'll be the vessel captains themselves, and it'll be ICE advisors that'll be providing them the advice on ICE.
And just to follow up,
Senator French, go ahead.
For their activities, for the docking, the refueling activities that they'll be undertaking while they're working in these seas, the same answer, same people at the helm?
Same people.
And are they Alaskans? Where are they from?
Some of them are Alaskans. There are a couple of foreign flag vessels because we don't have Jones Act resources here, but a good number of the vessels are American vessels, and there's a good, I don't have the exact numbers, but there are some Alaskans involved in the activities. But I can't give you the breakdown of what that actually looks like.
And you alluded to the next question, which was where the vessels come from, and do you have some idea of whether they're U.S. ships or foreign flagships, and if so, which?
The majority of them are U.S. flagships, but there are some foreign flag vessels. There's a Russian ice management vessel that's coming, and there's a Finnish anchor hunter that's coming this year as well. But there are American vessels also, of which the Nanook is one with Edison Schwest offshore. There are also some supply vessels that are coming from Louisiana, belonging to a company called Harvey Gulf.
Thank you.
But there are also locally owned vessels, the smaller vessels.
Okay. When you say locally owned, what do you mean? You mean within?
Locally owned Alaskan vessels that are being chartered in for to support the activities.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
You please.
The next one, the next slide that has a graphic that looks like an oil rig there, that basically summarizes what we do with regard to risk. Everything that any oil company does, and Shell is no exception, is risk-based. So we spend significant resources. If you start from the bottom of the page rather than the top, a little back to front, I guess, but the first layer is the planning. And the key issue of planning stems from the assessment of risk, and we spend a considerable amount of time and resource in assessing the risks associated with all our operations, whether it be marine operations or offshore or onshore, whatever it is. Out of that process then comes the procedures and the standards that determine how vessels or whatever the activities are, how these are going to be managed. So the examples that we give here, DP vessels, so any vessel transferring fuel to our rig has to be dynamically positioned. They're extremely technical vessels and complicated vessels to operate with very highly trained American seafarers manning these vessels. The element of the 500-meter zone, very strict procedures around managing vessels before they come into close proximity to the rig. Okay, in terms of planning the operations that are taking place, there's a very detailed exchange of information that needs to take place between the vessel and the rig before permission is given for the vessel to come in. Working your way up, when you come to the third layer, there's the element of mechanical barriers. So the example that we're giving here is oil spill equipment on board the vessel Nanook, which is an Edison Suez vessel. Okay, but in any risk-based process, you have to ensure that you have the right barriers in place. Now, that encompasses the people barriers as well as the hardware and technical barriers. And then finally, there's the on-site response. Should some of these barriers fail, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Swiss cheese diagram where you have layers of whole Swiss cheeses and if the holes line up, you could have a hazard being released. When that happens, you have to be prepared for it and you have to have the right resources in place. So we have extensive contingency plans, just as an example, for Beaufort and Chukchi. If you move on to the next one, the next slide this is just a slide on ice forecasting. Like I mentioned when I started, the forecasting of ice accretion, of ice development and ice movement particularly is something that we focus on quite extensively. And there's a number of items that are just bullets there to highlight what we've got. As I said at the outset, this is just really a flavor of what we do. This is not, I cannot give you in a few moments a deep insight, but we would very much welcome the opportunity to provide you with that deep insight of everything that we do with regard to the assessment and mitigation of risk, not just for the marine, but the entire operation. Moving on to the next one, mitigation. Typically, you can break mitigating actions into people, processes, and equipment, and that roughly is what we've done here. People do not include pilots. They do not. We, in looking at it, we believe that the resources that we have, one of the key differences that one must always bear in mind with regard to maritime risk is consider the theater that you're working in. So one of the key differences between the sorts of vessels that pilots typically pilot in and out of port is that the masters of these vessels generally do not maneuver their vessels in and out of port on a daily basis. They do not. Masters on offshore vessels do it day in, day out. It's what they are trained to do. They are their own pilots. They are trained to do it. The added hazard that we have here in this theater of operations with regard to the management of ice is mitigated through the provision of ice advisors. And we have several of those that will be used in the theater. So the mitigation is there. The introduction of deep sea of pilots into it adds another interface and starts to increase the risk. Every interface you have in any event carries risk with it. And if we introduce pilots into it who currently do not have the experience and the competencies in the area, we are starting to introduce risk. Okay. Moving quickly on to the next one, on procedures. Procedures is something that we focus on a lot. But our procedures and our standards in Shell, they're the same here in Alaska as they are everywhere else across the globe. The first bullet states vessel owner requirements and pre-qualifications. That pre-qualification word means an awful lot to Shell and other companies that charter vessels in. We audit the companies that own the vessels extensively. We go in, we review their procedures to a significant degree. We then assess those companies. If the company is not rated satisfactorily, we will not use that company. And if the company is the only company that is able to provide the service, it needs to go to the highest level in the organization before we're allowed to use them. We also inspect the vessels. Every single vessel that we bring into our business has to be inspected and approved before it comes in, with a very strict, regimented inspection process. If a vessel fails the inspection, the vessel doesn't come at work for us. In addition to the vessel inspection process, we have a very deep technical dynamic positioning assurance process that also has to be filled for those vessels that are dynamic.
Captain Finlayson, just so you're aware that this hearing is for the for information related to marine pilots, and so you've gone well past the 4 minutes that we would like to, and we're starting to run low on time for the rest of the people that follow. So if you've got something that's specific toward the need for marine pilots, we'd like to hear that. If we have questions, we'll ask that. But anything other than that, we need to move on and summarize what your testimony is this afternoon.
So I appreciate that, Mr. Chairman. The slides, the content of the slides, the intent of those was to demonstrate that the risk is being mitigated. The risk of the offshore vessels and the offshore activities is being mitigated through alternative means, not using marine pilots. And that is the essence of what the slides are.
Do we have any questions of Mr. Captain Finlayson by Senator French?
Just a follow-up, I guess, and I appreciate the your coming here and testifying. But I guess my concern is that, you know, you have not operated, you nor your pilots or your masters have operated in this ocean. This is a new area.
Some of them have. One of them is in the room. The other has.
Captain Finlayson, we'll go and wait till the question is
answered. Fair enough. Then perhaps they have begun to operate there. But I guess my concern is that this is an ocean that is, in my view, unforgiving of error. That an error here will frankly cause your company enormously bad consequences, and even worse to the people that live there, consequences beyond that. And so my concern is that, you know, for the what, at least from my perspective, seems to be a fairly small insurance policy, the people that live in that region and the people of the state get that overriding assurance that we've got an Alaskan pilot on that vessel when it's performing technical maneuverings. You say they do them every day. You know, I don't operate in this arena, but I just think that from a sheer insurance aspect, given the enormously painful consequences of a spill or an accident, I'm surprised that Shell doesn't embrace this. I guess that's the answer or my statement. Thank you.
Captain Finlayson, you got a response to that?
So the masters that we have on the ice management vessels are all experienced ice masters. Some of them have worked in the area previously. The ICE advisors have all worked in the area previously, and that's why they have been recruited. We believe we have the majority of ICE advisors with a huge amount of experience working both on the US side and on the Canadian side of the Arctic. So we believe that we do have a significant level of ICE management resource available to
us. So they've worked both in the Beaufort Sea and the Chukchi Sea?
They've worked in both.
Always as Shell employees?
No, not always as Shell employees, no. They've worked for various companies.
Sure.
But the history goes back a good number of years.
Senator French, follow.
Thank you.
Any further questions for Captain Finlayson by members of the committee? If not, thank you very much for coming out this afternoon.
Thank you very much.
Next we have Curtis Thayer, Deputy Commissioner of DCCED. Identify yourself for the record, please, and go ahead with your testimony.
For the record,
I apologize that we're running short on time.
I will try to be quick here. For the record, my name is Curtis Thayer, and I serve as the Deputy Commissioner of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, and was appointed Chairman of the Alaska Board Marine Pilots in January of this year. By statute, the Board is charged with providing for the maintenance of efficient, competent pilotage services on inland and coastal waters off and adjacent to the state to ensure the protection of shipping and safety of human life and property and the protection of the marine environment. Although I was only appointed to the board a few months ago, I will attempt through a review of the board's meeting notes and conversations with those involved to give a short history and outline the board's perspective as I understand it in regards to the topic today. Discussion of the Arctic began in earnest at the board level almost 2 years ago. At a board meeting in January 2008, the Alaska Marine Pilots, recognized pilot association based in Dutch Harbor, addressed issues regarding protection of waters surrounding the Alaska's Arctic coastline and brought the issue of compulsory pilotage and adoption of an ice regime in the Arctic before the board. Their report that day included a presentation by an experienced captain from Edison Schwest Offshore, who has 27 expeditions of Antarctica under his belt, a company which owns and operates a fleet of offshore service vessels and research vessels. As an experienced master and ice pilot, the captain outlined activities currently taking place, well as possible future operations in the Arctic. In addition to reviewing the status of lease sales off the Alaska coastline, the presentation consisted mainly of information regarding the status of the Canadian Arctic and how their Arctic transportation systems work, and the role that experienced ice navigators currently play in the Canadian Arctic ice regime. At the meeting, draft regulations were submitted to the board by the Pilots Association that would extend the state's compulsory pilotage area 200 miles into the Beaufort and Chukchi Seas. It would require all foreign flag vessels working in Antarctica to employ an Alaska Marine pilot. That language was approved for public comment and board consideration. The language was revised and put out for public comment again in 2008 and 2009. The proposed mandatory pilotage regulations went through many drafts. At our board meeting in April of 2009, the assistant AG to the board said that any regulation adopted by the board, which impacted waters beyond 3 miles, would more likely be challenged, but a record might be built based on findings that could possibly help defend such a far-reaching regulation in the future. An attempt was made to solicit these findings from stakeholders, but did not succeed. The proposed regulations were withdrawn in April of 2009. The board formed an Arctic committee in April 2009, met once, did not produce a formal recommendation or report. The board accepted a chairman's report on January 25th of this year, and no further action was taken. There is a very lengthy record of comments on this issue, both pro and con. If you desire more complete information about the stakeholders involved, I can pull that information together, and we also have a Marine pilot coordinator who is knowledgeable on the issue. From the state's perspective, we are greatly concerned with any current traffic, future resource development, and maritime activity of any kind in the Alaskan waters of the Arctic. Be carried out with the utmost care by professionals with the training and experience required to provide the highest level of safety to the environment, to our coastal communities. Unfortunately, at this time, we do not possess all the information needed to make an intelligent decision about exactly how to move forward in deciding the best means of mitigating relevant safety and environmental risks for the increased traffic that the Arctic could present. There are over 30 international, federal, and state organizations currently working to determine the path the country should follow in regards to the U.S. Arctic regime. Everyone understands the importance of these issues and its severity of the issues that requires us to take the time to evaluate all the information available so to make the best decision regarding proper Arctic ice regime to the Alaska and to the U.S. In addition, many questions still exist about the legality and jurisdiction of the Board of Marine Pilots to make decisions outside the 3-mile limit. International maritime organizations' requirements must be followed and laws of the seas convention reviewed prior to any changes in navigation in Alaska. New definitions may be needed as we move forward, as Alaska's Arctic is currently devoid of any offshore ports, harbors, or guidelines for current regulations. Traditionally, the U.S. Coast Guard is in charge of the safety of navigation and licensing of maritime professionals in open waters around the U.S. An April 9, 2008 letter to the state Rear Admiral Bronner Gardner, Judge Advocate General for the U.S. Coast Guard, and the U.S. expressed concerns about the impact of state regulations on the important principles of domestic and customary international laws of navigation, which vital United States national security and economic interests depend. Because of these reasons, and many more, I plan to prepare a list of questions for board approval at our next meeting on April 28th here in Juneau, for approval to present to the Attorney General to help to determine and delineate a clearer legal path that the state might follow as we proceed to help design guidelines that will safely take us into the future, which will include resource development in the Arctic and ice-free navigation across Alaska's Arctic waters.
Any questions of Deputy Commissioner Thayer by members of the committee? Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Has there been no previous work done on this? I see some of these letters dating from 2008 regarding the similar requests. So I realize you're new to it, but is there nothing left from your predecessors as far as looking into the situation and coming up with some recommendations at least?
Currently, there's no pending regulations before the board or any action for the board to take on Arctic pilotage. They went down the regulation path, they've had public hearings, and they were withdrawn. So there's currently nothing pending before the Board of Marine Pilots at this time.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Oh, Senator French.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the absence of Marine pilots, what's the administration's plan then for overseeing and keeping basically an eye on the activity there to ensure the integrity of our waters?
Understand that at the present time, we don't have the activity for the Marine pilots. And this is something that was started in 2008, and the board has struggled with it. And that's one of the questions that we have for the Attorney General is what jurisdiction does the board have to go beyond the 3 miles? I think quite frankly, that's a decision that should have been asked of the Attorney General 3 years ago. I don't know why they went down the path of regulations and public hearings without finding out what the jurisdiction of the board was. And that's a question that should have been answered long ago.
Follow up, Senator Frisch.
Fair enough. But, looking forward, we've got drill ships coming into the Beaufort and Chukchi seas this year. And so looking backwards at what didn't happen isn't going to fix a problem that happens this summer. I guess my question is what's the administration's plan? Are we going to have, who is going to observe this activity? Who is going to ensure that our waters are protected? And I guess I hope the administration is as aggressive as asserting its domain and dominion in these waters as it has been in other conflicts with the federal government.
Mr. Thayer?
As far as the position from the state, I would have to get back to you on that because this is in relative to the Board of Marine Pilots, and we don't have anything pending before it. And, I think that work should have been done 3 years ago at the start of this, and it wasn't done and wasn't complete. And that's one of the things that we struggle with as a board is we don't have the jurisdiction to put pilots on these boards. The state does not, nor does the Board of Marine Pilots. And that's something we struggle with.
Follow-up, Senator Frisch.
Last question. What's as the chairman of the Board of Marine Pilots, and as a representative of the administration, what's the position? What guidance can you give us about what's going to happen? What do you think should happen?
Well, first off, as far as the Board of Marine Pilots, we want to try to find out what our legal jurisdiction is, and that's unclear. I'm sorry, but as far as taking place within 3 miles offshore, in some cases 6 and 9 miles, the Board of Marine Pilots have jurisdiction. 200 miles offshore, we don't have the jurisdiction. That's in federal waters.
And just, I guess, as the last analytical, I know it's getting late, but I guess, given the administration's willingness to challenge the federal government on so many areas, my view, for the purpose of this discussion, I would assert it. I would assert that we have a right to marine pilots in this domain, take the proactive stance, and frankly, let Shell Oil companies sue back and say that it doesn't have it. And I think they'd be hesitant to take that action. I think they'd really think that over. And I think that's a fight that most Alaskans would support you in taking on.
One of the things that we have done is I have met with the Admiral here for Alaska to find out their guidance and the direction that they're going to do and what oversight process they want to see in place. And so we are having an exchange as far as the Coast Guard, who at the time has jurisdiction, and to find out where they believe our jurisdiction ends and theirs begins. And so those conversations are taking place with the Coast Guard here, and that those have been going. We started that about a month ago.
Any further questions?
What's the nearest Coast Guard base to these waters?
Right now, they do flyovers actually out of Kodiak. Over Kodiak. Because we've discussed the flyovers. The Admiral has participated himself as far as looking at the ice.
How many days does it take to get a boat from Kodiak to these waters?
It is a concern of the Coast Guards. That is something we also discussed.
Thank you.
If I can, that through the chair, that's one of the issues that they have is where is going to be the port for the North Slope. where is the port going to be, and that hasn't been resolved. It's because they don't have, nor are their ports suitable for some of the staging for some of the ships that they feel are necessary to be offshore to respond.
Mr. Thayer, you made a comment a little while ago. There's no activity up on the area, up in the Arctic Ocean. I beg to differ with you. It's my understanding there have been a number of cruise ships that have come across the Northwest Passage and have come through that area already. Is that not true?
There's been some activity, but as far as offshore drilling, we have not seen that on the North Slope.
Sir, is the department in favor of having state licensed marine pilots on board these 26 vessels, some of which are foreign flagged, and quite frankly, I'm not sure that everybody on there is going to be speaking English.
Again, as far as the Board of Marine Pilots, we are trying to determine our jurisdiction beyond the 3 miles.
So you're not in favor of it?
As far as I represent, I'm chairman of the board. It's a 7-person board. They've not had the issue before them presented in that fashion for the board to take a position. And as chairman, I'd be hesitant to speak for a board where they have 7 members, 2 which are pilots.
Any further questions, Mr. Thayer, by members of the committee? If not, thank you very much for coming out this afternoon. Next, we have Clayton Diamond, Director of American Marine Pilots Association from Washington, D.C. Mr. Diamond, are you on, sir?
Yes, sir.
If you state your name for the record and go through your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Clayton Diamond. I'm the Deputy Director of the American Pilots Association. Before I joined the APA, I served more than 20 years as a commissioned officer with the U.S. Coast Guard. First as a shipboard officer and navigation instructor at the Coast Guard Academy, and later as an attorney specializing in maritime and international law. Incidentally, I'm very proud to say that during my first assignment in the Coast Guard, I was on a cutter and I routinely sailed the Bering Sea. The APA has been the National Association of the Piloting Profession since 1884. Today there are approximately 1,200 individual pilots working in the 60 APN number of pilot groups around the country, and this includes the 3 state pilot groups in Alaska. These APA members pilot more than 95% of all ocean-going foreign trade vessels moving in U.S. waters. The APA appreciates the opportunity to testify today before this committee and to discuss the issue of state pilotage in the Arctic and the critical role state licensed pilots play in navigation safety and environmental protection. We strongly support this committee's work of exploring the idea of expanding the state of Alaska's compulsory pilot requirements to encompass the newly opened Arctic waters. In our view, this is both responsible and far-sighted. As you know, Mr. Chairman, the pilot system in this country is a system of state regulation and state responsibility. This system reflects a specific judgment made by Congress in 1789 that due to the localized and the unique nature of pilotage, its regulation is best left to the states. And one of the major benefits of this local control of pilotage is the ability of a state to quickly adjust or adapt its pilot system to the changing conditions or development within that state. Compulsory state pilotage is navigation safety regulation. In fact, it's considered by many to be the most effective form of navigation safety regulation. As we heard from the mayor earlier, although the state pilot is not an employee of the government, the pilot does perform an important public service. A compulsory state pilot is able to exercise judgment that is independent from the economic interests of the ship owners and its operators. The pilot is answerable only to the state that licenses and regulates him or her, and has as their sole objective to protect the waters where they're licensed. In that respect, the principal custom of the pilot is not the ship or the ship owner, but rather the state and its citizens. It's prudent that the committee is exploring the idea of expanded compulsory state pilotage in the Arctic waters now. On an effective compulsory pilot system, pilots are required to be available at all times and to all ships that are required to have a pilot, equally and without discrimination. Ships that are required to take a state pilot must receive trained, competent, well-rested pilots without delay. In order to meet those responsibilities, pilot associations are required to maintain training programs, pilot boats, dispatch services, rotation systems, and all other types of equipment and support systems needed for a modern, efficient, and safe pilotage operation. state of Alaska does opt to expand its compulsory pilot waters and its requirements, it will take some time to ensure that a professional ice pilot infrastructure is in place. Commercial vessel operations in these newly open waters present special and unique challenges, as we've heard, and Alaska needs to prepare for these challenges now. Setting up a comprehensive compulsory pilot regime for these fragile waters is not something that can be looked into later, particularly not after an accident or pollution incident has occurred. In our opinion, the state is right to explore filling the vacuum that now exists concerning the proposed shipping activities in these newly open waters. As the committee is now doing, the state should explore exercising the fullest extent of its pollution prevention and marine safety authority. A compulsory pilot requirement is by far the most effective mechanism available to a state government to protect its waters, assure the safety of its people and environment, and to facilitate waterborne commerce. By extending its compulsory pilot system to the Arctic waters, Alaska would be ensuring that pilots who are U.S. citizens, subject to the state's oversight, true local navigation experts, and accountable only to the citizens of Alaska will be on these commercial vessels. In short, compulsory pilot is the state's most viable option to protect the sensitive Arctic environment. Now, I'd like to address a particular issue before closing, and I will try to be brief. As we've heard and we understand, there are some interests who've raised jurisdictional questions about Alaska's authority to extend its piloted waters to newly opened Arctic waters that extend beyond 3 miles from the coastline. Quite frankly, Mr. Chairman, this is a red herring. It is established beyond question that a state can assert its piloted waters out as far as the state feels is necessary to achieve the objective of its piloted system. This was confirmed in the fairly recent case of Gillis versus Louisiana, a 2002 Fifth Circuit case. The court in that case very clearly held that the geographic reach of a state's pilot jurisdiction is neither limited to 3 miles nor preempted by federal law. This decision cites several other decisions by the U.S. Supreme Court and other federal courts recognizing the maritime law principle that states enjoy extraordinarily broad authority to regulate pilotage. This broad authority absolutely includes jurisdiction to extend compulsory pilot requirements well beyond 3 miles. I'll conclude with that, Mr. Chairman, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you or other committee members may have.
Any questions of Mr. Diamond or members of the committee? Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Diamond, for your testimony. How long would it take someone that is already a pilot to whatever understanding we have those are that would be serving on these ships that already exist for Shell? How long would it take someone in that situation to get the necessary requirements to have the same requirements as are being asked for?
Mr. Chairman, I would feel a little more comfortable deferring on that one to Captain Gray.
Okay, that's fine.
Any further questions? Senator French.
Just quickly, you're breaking up a little bit. I wonder if you could send to me or the other members by email the citation that you gave us regarding that Fifth Circuit case. I'd love to read that case. If you just send me the legal citation, I can pull it up and look at it myself.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
On that point, Mr. Diamond, you thought it was an appellate court level that you had the ruling?
It was the U.S. Fifth Circuit.
Okay. Any further questions, Mr. Diamond? If not, thank you very much for staying up this afternoon or this evening, mm-hmm. and appreciate your testimony. Next,
yes,
we
sir. Happy to do it.
Okay. Next, we have on Alaska's Mayor Shirley McCourt. Are you? Please come up from identify yourself for the record and go to the testimony.
Hi again. For the record, I'm Mayor Shirley Marquardt, City of Unalaska, and the Port of Dutch Harbor. And I'm here to talk primarily about my experience with the pilots in my neck of the woods in the Aleutian Island region, which is also a maritime refuge, National Maritime Refuge. And it's This is it's a complex question. It's not as simple as it sounds, particularly in listening to the experience that some of the masters on these vessels that Shell is bringing up as compared to experience with the Alaska Marine pilots. But what I can tell you, in that years of working in Alaska for vessels of all types and sizes from container vessels and trampers and freighters to working on tugboats and fishing vessels, particularly with the larger vessels, what I have learned is that if you do not have our pilots involved in the movement of those ships, you are definitely compromising safety in our port. We've seen that many times. What is an odd thing to think of, though, is that the most oil spills that we've had throughout the Aleutian region in probably the last 20 years have come from fishing vessels. They have not come from the larger spills like the Selendang Ayu, a one-time large spill. And yet those vessels are allowed to their masters, their captains, run those vessels, and we wouldn't think of putting pilots on board every single one of those vessels to try and stop a problem. So, you know, I think there's the blanket approach and then there's the scalpel approach when you start looking at this issue. And I just hope that you really take into consideration what the pilots do have to say, the experience that they bring to the table. And again, that their focus, when they get on board a vessel, they're not worried about personnel issues or if there's, you know, what time dinner is in the galley or, you know, who's fighting with who or what maybe some business pressures may be. Their sole focus is that vessel and moving that vessel from point A to point B in the safe way. And our pilots in Alaska, they have truly become part of the community. It's their backyard, and they know every square inch of it. Often charts and information are very unreliable in our neck of the woods, and so they have the information, they have the experience needed to keep folks safe. And they do it without stifling our economic fast pace, which is always an issue with industry, and it's legitimate. So they've been able to find that balance and always putting protection of the marine resource first. So, I appreciate your time. Thank you for hearing.
Any other questions? Any questions by members of the committee of the Madam Mayor? If not, I've got a question for you.
Yes.
It sounds like you're in favor of having marine pilots on these vessels that are out there. Can you point to an example where, as was pointed out by the mayor of the North Slope Borough, the big thing is having an oil spill. Can you point to any one time where they may have been able to prevent something like that or something, some disaster that may have gone on out there? We all know about the Selendang Ayu. It was one of those things that was out there, but it actually was out in, when it ran into trouble, was out in more international waters when it started drifting ashore, but obviously it was a disaster for what was there.
It was. Well, I'm serving on the advisory panel of the Aleutian Island Risk Assessment, and one thing that I've definitely learned is that there are so many reasons why vessels spill oil out there, and from mechanical breakdown to human error to, you know, combined with weather, and quite often it's a mixture of two or three of those items all together, and things break down. What we have found, it primarily depends on the experience of the crew on board the vessel, the training that they've had, whether the ship is in good working order or not. Those types of vessels we see very little problems with. It's the other vessels, the trampers and the freighters that are our primary problem children. So pilotage is, I think, very important. I don't know yet. It's not clear to me if every vessel up there, like a supply vessel coming back and forth from Alaska, needs a pilot on board. I don't know. But I would have certainly concerns about the larger vessels, the drill rigs, or the fueling ship, I think, is going to possibly be staying put in Alaska. I'm not sure about that. But there would certainly be times when they're moving in and out of those areas that absolutely, I think it is important.
No further questions. Thank you very much, Madam Mayor.
Thank you.
Next we have Captain Pete Garay, Alaska Marine Pilots Association. Mr. Captain Garay.
Correct. Pete Garay. Yes, sir.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. My name's Pete Garay. I'm the president of the Alaska Marine Pilots. Forgive me if I stumble around a little bit. I'm a lot better on the bridge of the ship than I am in situations or forums like this, but I've made some notes. So I'll try to kind of stick under the 5 minutes you've given me. By way of introduction, Tell you a little bit about myself. I'm a graduate from Linfield College. I have a political science degree. After Linfield, I went to sea for several years on the back deck of a factory trawler. I thought that was a pretty tough way to make a living, so I enrolled in California Maritime Academy and graduated with a degree in nautical industrial technology and earned an unlimited third mate's license. I sailed for about 10 years in the capacity of third mate, second mate, chief mate, and my last job was master of a large factory trawler in the Bering Sea. At the completion of that job, I began the training for a pilot's job. That took about another 5 years, and I think I got my pilot's license in 1990. So I've been piloting out in this area for about 20 years. And when I say this area, I mean from Kodiak Island all the way to the end of the Aleutians on up to the Canadian Arctic border. Some other things that I have done over my career, I think that are somewhat germane to this, or at least me being here, is I've been a member on the Board of Marine Pilots. I was one of the pilot board members for about 5 years. I'm the president, current president of Alaska Marine Pilots, and have held that position for about 6 years. I'm the delegate for the APA for all of Alaska pilots. There's probably a couple other things, but I'll get to the meat and potatoes of what I have to say. Our position in this matter is really pretty simple, and it has been for some time, and that is we think compulsory marine pilotage is the preventative system or tool, if you will, that should be employed to protect the Arctic from the inherent risks associated with commercial shipping. My pilot organization and myself personally believe the state would be wise to exercise its jurisdiction and implement a system of compulsory pilotage in the OCS of the Arctic Ocean. In the parlance, I guess, of our current administration, I would say and have been saying for 2 years, my organization stands shovel ready to help this administration, should it so choose, to implement a system of pilotage. Now, having said all that, there's something that's a little more difficult. And I think it's important that I admit to you that implementing and developing the kind of system of pilotage I envision is not going to be an easy task, for some of the reasons you've already heard here, but for a couple others that I think, in my mind, are worth sharing with you. And the first thing is that in order for this system that I've been talking about for 2 years to work, in order for it to work, we need to design and develop a system that's unconventional. That's because the area we're going to be working in is anything but conventional. And that's not such a high hurdle to clear, because we do unconventional. That's what I've been doing out in Western Alaska, including in the Arctic, for the past 20 years. And I can give you lots of examples of why our system is unlike any place else in the United States, if after I get done with my testimony you want me to go into that. And I'd be more than happy to do that, be proud to do that. The second hurdle that would be difficult to clear, and a little bit more, I'd say a lot more difficult than the first one I just mentioned, is that industry's strong objection to this issue of extending pilotage in the Arctic. It's been my experience, having been out there for the past, out there, Western Alaska, for 20 years. Our system works best when industry and pilots work together, when we cooperate and we communicate. Unfortunately, as you've heard and surmised, that's not the case right now. Industry and pilots are quite far apart. In fact, I took a note here of one of the testimony that was said before you, in the verbatim, pilots increase the risk in this theater of operations. That's ludicrous. So considering how far apart we are with industry over here and pilots over here, how do we meet in the middle? And the answer to that question is even more problematic when you stop to consider the fact that safety for the compulsory pilot is something we can't compromise on. Now, I know that's a big statement to say, you can't compromise, because essentially most political solutions are the art of compromise. But the reason our system works is because we have regulations and laws that allow us to, you know, fulfill our mandate without compromise. So I guess I just kind of follow and what I have to say, that at the end of the day, myself, my group believes that that having a mechanism in place that is able to protect life, property, and the environment without compromise is a system that ultimately would benefit everybody in this room. And just one other thing I put on the table for you to consider, don't be misled. There's more to this than just about ice. There's a whole bunch of other stuff that's going to have to be done to mitigate the risks up there as well. So in any event, that's about all I have to say, and I'd sure like to answer any of your questions or address concerns you might have. Over.
Any questions, Captain Grave? Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Grave, or Garnett, or whichever.
Grave.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. I'm not sure that you have any concept of the somewhere American ships may have American pilots. Can you comment, or do you have any idea of what their particular certifications are at this point and what it would take for them? The existing pilots of these ships, or captains of these ships, however they're properly referred to, would take to get themselves up to speed or receive the certifications that are required?
It took me 15 years. From the time I graduated from the academy, sailing 10 years in grade, another 5 years in training, and it took another 5 years before I became licensed as an unlimited pilot in Western Alaska. So there's no quick shortcuts.
Yeah. With that understanding, though, I'm assuming these people must have some kind of training in Arctic conditioning simply due to the nature of the boats and that they've been up there, ships been up there for some time. So is there... would it be a reevaluation of these people's particular status at this point in time, and then a look at what it would take for them to become accredited?
I think, and there may be others more suited to answer that question, that there is accreditation being discussed at IMO about watch keeping in ice conditions and licensing of officers and ice conditions and such. So these are issues, though, that everyone's arm wrestling with in terms of what new accreditation licensing standards and stuff need to be put in place. So to put a timeline on how long that would take, I can't tell you. Yeah, you know, maybe years. Yeah, it seems to me, though, it should happen sooner rather than later, because as somebody testified here earlier, the ships are going to show up this next summer. And absent any kind of safety net in place, I think the state risks a whole lot by not having anything in place. But that's a good question, a good one to ask some of the other folks out here.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions of Captain Gray?
I just have one here.
Senator Menard.
Yes, I have a question I wanted to ask you. Tell me, is there a current shortage of pilots in Alaska?
Not yet. I say that.
But you would argue that there are enough pilots already highly licensed that could help out.
Oh, I absolutely. And out in the Western District, again, I don't envision in the beginning anyway. Again, I talk about a visioning process about how this would move forward. And it would be a growing process. I started working in Western Alaska 20 years ago and didn't have a clue what was going on. And over the course of 20 years, we learned how to maneuver 1,000-foot ships and all the weather conditions out there and such. And as the traffic changed and different patterns happened, we expanded and decreased as the needs of industry dictated. But in the Arctic, I envision a process that would post one or two pilots up there initially anyway to act essentially as a scout, to go up and participate, take a look around, and be involved in what I would coin the epicenters of activity. Now, this isn't something foreign. We do this already in our region. I'll use Bristol Bay or Togiak as an example. When all the trampers and everybody goes up there, we don't send 10 pilots up there. We send one pilot. And that pilot essentially acts as a conductor, and he orchestrates events. So in the beginning of this, as exploration moves forward, hopefully, and everything else continues to go. You have a pilot on station in the epicenter of activity on, say, the, I'll use as an example, this summer, I understand, there'll be a tanker going up there. I proposed and thought it'd be a good idea. Well, it should be a good idea to have the pilot on that tanker for the entry and the exit, and when it shifts around to accommodate the whale hunt up there. That way he gets familiar with all the other vessels that'll be up there, the different vessel masters, the Canadian ICE advisors that they've told you about. And I'll tell you, Canadian ICE advisors, great people, really highly skilled. Problem is, most of them are retired, and they're over here, they've hung their signal out, and they're picking up a little extra work, but they're going to go away real soon. And somebody needs to replace that workforce. So you send a pilot up, put him on the ship, he's able to rub elbows a little bit and get a little bit of better idea that at the end of the season you could begin to develop a blueprint of the needs. In maybe 5 years, you'd have a couple more pilots. Now, as I told you, it takes about 5 years to bring a pilot up from, if you're, in my case, it's a little less time if you're an unlimited master, but 3 to 5 years is a good timeline. So getting involved from the get-go to kind of see what we're going to get ourselves into, I think, is absolutely critical. To try to do it after the fact, after everything's up and running, and say, oh, by the way, we need to get a bunch of pilots up here, that's not going to happen. Does that kind of help out? I could keep going on this.
Follow-up, Senator Meyer?
No, I'm just seeing industry versus, you know, I'm just trying to... It's a
tough one. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, it's a difficult one. There's no easy solution to this. As I said, and I can't overstate, that the system for it to be successful is going to be unconventional. You know, some of the things we deal with, as an example, Mayor Marquelt, I think, may have mentioned the emergency towing system. We are essentially primary conductors in that. And there's no other place in the U.S. where pilots directly involve themselves in extremist situations where they get in the middle and help organize the response to get this vessel or to stabilize events, because there's salvors and there's all other kinds of stuff. We don't have that kind of infrastructure out west. So the task to who's going to protect life, property, and marine environment, you know, falls on our shoulders. So we come up with things like the emergency towing system, the severe weather guidelines of what you can do. As an example, you want to do lightering operations in the Arctic Ocean, who's going to decide in what conditions those take place? 10-foot seas, 15-foot seas, 20 knots of wind. There needs to be somebody, and I argue that somebody needs to be a representative of the state who's on that, in the middle of that operation, saying, this is a good idea, this is not a good idea. And like we did in Western Alaska over the years, we'll come up with, again, some guidelines of what makes sense and what doesn't make sense.
Okay. If there are no further questions, thank you, Captain Murray. Thank you very much for coming up this afternoon. We've run out of time, so we'll conclude this hearing on the Arctic marine pilotage. I believe it's important that we keep this issue on the table. It needs to be discussed. We need to bring all parties together so we can get results sooner rather than later. All Alaskans want to see successful development that's responsible. That means we have to consider all our options as we extend our operations into the Arctic Ocean. With that, thank you very much for coming this afternoon. I don't anticipate the CRNA committee meeting will be again this session. We'll advise around the committee. This meeting is adjourned.